Loretta. I'm probably not...
Mayor may or may not be back. Good afternoon, notes. Everybody. It's Wednesday, September 9th.
You're not.
Here is the mayor.
What's your last?
I'm basically...
yes, I have not. Saltzman?
Oh, here. The first one.
Novick?
Just that.
Here.
Fritz?
Just stay while
here.
I'm talking.
Fish?
Just stay on that slide.
Hales?
Here. Thank you very much, Commissioner Fritz. And let's take item 946.
Accept the Americans with Disabilities Act Transition Plan Update, Parks Facilities Supplement.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Fritz, do you have some comments?
I do. Just the purpose is to present the Parks and Americans with Disabilities Act Transition Plan. We have surveyed 206 public accessible sites, identified 20,355 barriers. 17,008 of those are scheduled to be removed, and we greatly appreciate the partnership with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, also the Parks Board, the Parks Accessibility Advisory Committee, Portland Commission on Disability, the ADA Transition Plan Stakeholder Review Committee, when we've held three public forums and lots of online comments. And I will just say that it was of great satisfaction to me that I was able to hand over the Bureau of Development Services to Commissioner Saltzman with all of those ADA transition items completed. So thank you for your work jointly in creating that list and then BDS and being able to get through it. Obviously, with 20,000 and more in parks, that's a significant challenge. And so we're looking forward to hearing the consultant's report.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having us. I'm Brett Horner with Portland Parks, and I'm joined by David Gallat of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And we have a short presentation, and I'm going to let David lead that off.
As you know, the ADA transition plan was accepted, I think, November 6th of 2014, and this is the kind of the final piece for the facilities transition plan. And Parks was given an extension based on the large amount of barriers that they had, and also kind of the unique facilities. So it's not just the Portland building where everything happens at the Portland building. Parks are spread out all over geographically. There's a lot of programs happening. So they really had to do a thoughtful analysis of the barriers that were identified and come up with a good strategy given this huge number of barriers. Just a little bit of context. The ADA is a civil rights law. There are three main titles. Title I is covers discrimination against people with disabilities in the workplace. Title II is with public and government entities. And Title III is in the private sector. And so the ADA transition plan is Title II, which City of Portland is part of. Let me just find out where I'm at. As Brett is going to lead us through their efforts to schedule, categorize, and identify all of the barriers, and it just kind of really highlights the work that they've done. And the park staff has done, it's been a heavy lift for them, more so than any other bureau. So I'm very proud of them. I was recently in Atlanta, Georgia at the National ADA Symposium, and I carried a copy of our transition plan with me. Transition plans were kind of a highlight there. A lot of breakout sessions. We're covering transition plans and different aspects of them. And I did some networking with people and kind of showcased our Portland's transition plan. And I got a lot of very good feedback there at the event. Since coming back, I've been getting phone calls, or our office has, asking for advice and more information on how Portland went through this process to develop such a, a really comprehensive plan for removing barriers for people with disabilities, and I'm really very proud of city government, the bureaus, the stakeholders that have been involved, the voters who passed the bond. We're having some money earmarked for removing barriers at parks. So thank you all very much. And I think this is a really great beginning body of work to move forward to making, you know, the city very accessible.
Great. Thank you, David. During the citywide assessment, there were approximately 25,000 barriers identified. And as you might imagine, the service parks provides is publicly accessible places. So the vast majority, in fact, over 20,000 of them, were in Portland parks and recreation facilities. The rest of the citywide transition plan went to City Council in November of 2014, you may recall. And due to the quantity of barriers in the parks portfolio, we had a modified schedule, and thank you for allowing us a modified schedule to complete that work. 260 park sites and facilities were surveyed by a consultant team between December 2012 and April 2014. 3,000 of the 20,000 barriers were either at Sun School sites, which will be school district and not parks responsibility to fix, or are not required to be accessible by ADA, like picnic tables, where we have many picnic tables in a park, for instance, only 20% of them are required to be accessible tables, the rest are not. PPNR has reviewed and set target schedules for all of our identified 17,000 barriers. Development of the plan was a collaborative effort, worked very closely. We had a standing agenda item with the Parks Accessibility Advisory Committee with a group of community members and city staff who advise Portland Parks on accessibility-related issues. Also briefed were the Portland Commission on Disabilities several times and with more in-depth briefings for the Accessibility in the Built Environment Subcommittee of that commission. Early in the process, also we also discussed development of the plan with a stakeholder group convened by Office of Health, Equity and Health and Human Resources to inform the citywide plan development. We held most recently three public forums this past July in different areas of town to discuss the plan and solicited comments online as well. We heard a great deal of support for the plan, a lot of enthusiasm for making the parks accessible, and encouragement to really go beyond the ADA minimum requirements. So for those of you who like numbers and detail, this is just a quick snapshot of what that report looks like. All of the barriers are identified. They are categorized and numbered. And there's also a map that we use for each site to identify the location of the barriers. Now, of the 20,000, we've broken those down into 95 different types of barriers. So you can imagine 95 different types of repairs and fixes to be made is a lot. And it ranged, obviously, a great deal as well, everything from the speed with which a door closes or how slowly a self-closing door closes, all the way up to things as big as elevators and other capital project-related things. We discussed those capital and central services maintenance staff with our staff and made an estimate for which, like adjusting the mirror heights or door pulls, would likely be candidates to do as part of our routine maintenance operations. So we're hoping to get out a lot of these barriers fixed through our normal maintenance routines. About half the projects, though, half the barriers are really capital related. The other half are maintenance, we feel, are maintenance related. And the good news is we've already removed 32 barriers as part of this process. So we didn't stop until all the assessment was done. Once we had the consultant's information, we began knocking off those things that we knew we could do. And here's an example of that. Most recently, we opened Marshall Park in Southwest Portland, and as part of that playground replacement, we were able to incorporate a number of ADA repairs and fixes, and that included regrading the pathway down to the facility so that it met the 5% slope, and also repairing and replacing the non-ADA accessible tables, picnic tables, with ones that are accessible. A little bit about how we ranked and scored and prioritized things here on this slide is we assigned each site to a tier, so there were three tiers. The tier one being the most heavily visited parks, parks where we had known issues with accessibility or requests to fix things for accessibility. We also had multiple briefings with the subcommittee on the built environment from the Commission on Disability and the citywide ADA transition plan stakeholders. The tier was assigned as a first step, and then based on the number of visitors, how unique a facility was, we were put in, the parks themselves were put into three different tiers, with tier one being the most, the highest priority. Each barrier was also assigned a category based on the federal guidance, that's the ADA law, and they are also known as categories, with one being the most important. A path of access to a facility, for instance, a doorway into a facility is a major category one barrier. And then there are five different different types of barriers. Carla Waring, who's in the audience for us, we had hired to help us complete the transition plan. She did a great deal of work with the field staff. So just ground truthing things that we saw in the consultants' reports were done with field staff, identifying really kind of going out and looking at which picnic tables made the most sense to have accessible. She worked with the staff and also worked very closely with our advisory committee, our disability advisory committee. And again, what we heard was path of travel, loud and clear, was number one importance. Restrooms being accessible were also very highly rated. And then getting into the other program areas once you're in and have access to a facility. Here again is just a snapshot of the breakdown on the priority scores. Again, score of three is really the highest priority, and which would be like a path of travel, and then a tier one for a park or a facility itself. The transition plan park supplement is a narrative describing our planning process and includes a summary of each park. So this is available online. Members of the public can go in and look at individual sites if they're interested in a particular park and find a description of these barriers. So that's really a good thing to be sharing with the public. And while the transition plan is really focused on addressing existing barriers in the park system, I also want to highlight a few examples of how Parks is thinking ahead as we develop new facilities. As we redevelop existing sites and build new parks, Portland Parks not only ensures that new designs meet ADA minimums, but look for opportunities to expand accessibility and inclusiveness and address identified barriers. So the one example I had given previously is a good example of that at Marshall Park, and our successful partnerships with Harper's Playground to build Harper's Playground and Arbor Lodge Park to make a universally accessible play experience. Another recent example is Dawson Park renovation. When updating the play areas, we also look for opportunities to enhance accessibility and include adaptive and inclusive features and more accessible surface treatments. So our next steps will be tracking and reporting all of these barriers so we can quickly determine which have been completed. That was one of the flaws of previous transition plans. We had no tracking system, but we're able to do that now. And so we'll be identifying that. The transition plan for facilities is part of a larger umbrella of citywide efforts that the Office of Equity and Human Rights will be leading. Next, they are embarking on an evaluation of policies and programs and will assess right-of-way facilities as well, so the streets and rights-of-way. The office will also be compiling annual reports showing our progress by all bureaus and to address identified barriers. I want to thank everybody that was involved in the process. We have a member of the our Parks Accessibility Advisory Committee with us today, Fern Wildes, and I'm going to let her say a few words, and then we'll take any questions that you have.
Thanks. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Wells.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm one of the more recent joiners of this committee, and let me tell you, I've learned a lot. And what I've really appreciated is the city workers that have come in and worked with us, and that sort of thing, have been very open to the PAC recommendations. And I look forward to many, many years of further teamwork, if you will. We accomplished an awful lot in a very short period of time. Until you walk in my shoes, you really don't understand my life or my needs. And this is why it was so incredibly important to have people who have different abilities, disabilities, be a part of this, because Portland does have some marvelous parks. Right now, unfortunately, they're not accessible for a lot of people. I also look forward to being able to work with the city in the development of the new parks that are on the horizon. Some of us recently worked with the Tualatin Parks in development of one of their new systems out in the Beaverton area. It was so powerful to have them come right at the beginning. And Georgina and I worked a little bit with them. It was so powerful for the people in which the parks are intended for to have them there. So I look forward to continuing here. For people with disabilities, having access and usability for our beautiful parks is not only commendable, but so very much needed and mostly so much appreciated. The use of the parks, not only from the lanes and the pathways for people for accessibilities, but we're also looking at railings for whether you're in a wheelchair or having balance problems, and also a safety if you're going to be looking into like the Laurelhurst Lake. Signage, so that's some of the things that we're also taking a look at. Signage to help people relieve their potential fear of being lost or confused. Bathrooms are already talked about. The table accessibilities also was talked about, not just for eating, but some people with disabilities wouldn't be able to participate in the parks much other than table games or sitting around being able to talk with one another. One of the things that the parks does is it offers an equal opportunity for people who have lived in an isolated arena, whether for whatever the cases are, and to bring them out into the open, into the public. And it's so important. It's also a part of a rehabilitative perspective. And so if you can think of it in that terms. The other thing that I want to say is, and oh, by the way, what we've been looking at and thinking about isn't really just relevant for people with disabilities. We have quite a few senior citizens in the Portland area. Some of us, I for one, who's speaking, and the balance problems, the cognitive problems. I don't have time to go form a list. I have a book that I could show you, but anyhow, thank you, Portland, for getting the monies available. Thank you, City Council, for getting things put in place for good use of those monies. And thank you, Parks and Recreation, for asking us to be a partner.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Brett, I have a question. And first, I just want to say thank you for the report that we were given is very clear, and it, the information is presented in a comprehensible way. So good job to everyone who had a hand in it. I guess there's an area about Title II that I don't fully understand, so I'm going to ask you a couple of basic questions. So according to the report, under Title II, we have to prepare a transition plan. So we have to identify the barriers, rank them, and then we have to have a plan. And what's interesting is woven throughout the report is a qualification. And the qualification is having the necessary resources to implement the plan. And that's interesting because in other areas of the ADA, if someone brings a private right of action, what we look at in a reasonable accommodation, cost is a factor, but only to the extent it's prohibitive. Reasonable accommodations often have a cost, but we do balance. Does the cost outweigh the benefit? Is it prohibitive? Does it put someone out of business? That kind of stuff. Here, we are supposed to have a plan, and it's dependent on having the resources. And you make it very clear that your schedule goes out 20 years, with the highest priority stuff built in the early years around the maintenance budget and new capital spending, and some of the lower priority stuff backed out at the out years. So I guess the basic question I wanted to ask is, under Title II, are we on the clock? And at any time in the 20 years, do we have a defense of not having available resources, or are we out of compliance with the law?
So I would have to defer to the office or either to our legal counsel about that question. We can get back to you on specifics of that. We are looking at various ways to fund everything that needs to get done. We talked a little bit about the Parks Bond funding, some of the work at Washington Park, which we have a lot of ADA issues at. So we're looking at different types of funding sources, and then a lot of the repairs are fairly minor, so we think we can take care of those through operations and operating budgets. But you are correct, there is an unfunded piece to this that we're going to have to be working away at over the next 20 years, and I don't know if there's going to be a citywide approach to that with all of the bureaus or whether we'll obviously go about it individually, bureau by bureau. But it may make some sense for the city to consider some sort of budget request all of the repairs.
I think as the legal question, probably makes sense if we could just get a memo from the city attorney's office. We probably shouldn't be discussing this too publicly. But what I'd like a little more information because it's going to apply to a lot of bureaus. And the question is, once you have a transition plan, what is our legal obligation in terms of completing the removal of the barriers, and to what extent does cost or the our inability to pay give us additional time? I don't know what the law says about that, but I'd be interested because we're talking ultimately Title II plans will be developed with every bureau, and if the law is clear, for example, that we not only have to do a transition plan, but we have to fund it and we have to complete it within the high priority items with a reasonable period of time, then that goes beyond an aspirational document, that becomes a budget document. And bureau by bureau, we'd have to identify resources. So that would be a legal memo question. And
Commissioner, may I comment on that?
Please.
I really appreciate you raising that. And in fact, we did last year have an ADA request in the budget, which wasn't funded. It was why we put $5 million in the bond measure to start addressing some of the most urgent problems. And as was stated, in each of the projects, we are incorporating more accessibility features than was previously able to do. I don't think we're going to get our city attorney to say on the record that we're out of compliance with the law. I think
I'd settle for a confidential memo on that.
Not now, not ever.
Regardless, I think we have a moral obligation. It's been over 20 years since your father got the ADA Act signed into law, and it's more than time to correct this deficiency. It was remarkable when we went to the opening of the new park in Cully, Connemux Park, just the joy on everybody's faces of being able to use all of the play equipment and such. So there's multiple reasons for doing this. As Ms. Wilkes said, we're an aging population, and I'm certainly going to be in the position of needing more handrails and signs and things that, like she mentioned. So I appreciate the sense of urgency. We shouldn't put this on the back burner.
And I guess I was trying to ask the question delicately, because we're each going to bring our own view of the sense of urgency, the moral component. I share Commissioner Fritz's applause for the idea that what we're doing is making our facilities accessible for people of all ages and abilities. The beautiful thing about Harper's Playground is you can be 3 or 80. You can be fully abled or disabled. It's a park that welcomes everybody, and that's the standard. We want no barriers for anybody, any age, any ability. But anyway, so at some point, it would be helpful to me, since we're going to have to make some budget decisions, and I'm getting the sense that we just can't leave it to each bureau to beg, borrow, and plead for the resources to do this. We need some legal guidance as to what is our legal obligation to do this work and in what reasonable time frame. And the council can debate whether we accelerate that or not. But I don't know that the law gives us an out just by saying, you know, pending available resources, because that's not how Title I works. And so I'm not sure you get a pass on Title II.
I would just like to chime in. You know, the barriers that were identified, we're out of compliance. So having the transition plan is a good faith effort. The ADA is requiring this from us to say we are identifying where we're deficient, where we need to become compliant. We are going to come up with costs. We're going to categorize or prioritize them, and we're going to come up with a schedule. But that schedule doesn't hold us to a time, you know, just because we have this transition plan now in place isn't, if there's no legal binding to it other than we need to be compliant with the law.
Right. And as we know, the ADA is a remedial statute.
Yeah.
It's not like some other civil rights statutes that are designed to wrap you across the knuckles. It's a remedial statute. So if a claim is brought, then you have to, in good faith, go through a process to figure out how to remove the barrier and achieve a reasonable accommodation. But I mean, just in Title I, we wouldn't say to a motel that's where the units are not. Title III claim with a motel that has units that are not ADA accessible, you wouldn't say, "Well, go figure out what you have to do and come back in 20 years."
No.
You'd say, you know, how do you make sure your business is accessible to people? And short of shutting you down because it's too expensive, it might mean making the ground floor units accessible first or something. So
yeah.
I think we need some more legal guidance, because I have a feeling this becomes a citywide budget concern and not just leaving each bureau to fend for themselves.
Commissioner, what I found with BDS was once we had the list, that asking about it on a quarterly basis and having the director assign somebody to tick off each of the tasks, many of the things in these lists are not huge budget items. They are things that can be done relatively cheaply within existing budgets.
Well, and so I think you've also, the other thing I learned from that's very clear in this report is it's also everything we do going forward. There's no excuse not to incorporate the higher standards. So
simply the accountability and the reporting back I found was very effective in making sure that attention was paid to it. And indeed, the equity managers that many bureaus now have, that's part of their portfolio is to on their list of things to do to check through the
transition. Well, I appreciate this discussion because we're all learning, and this is very helpful.
Okay, more questions for the panel. Thank you all very much. We'll see if there are anyone else formally to present, but I think we might have others who want to speak on this. So,
actually, Mayor, I do have a question, and this is this might seem kind of silly, but just because I happen to live near two of the facilities with some of the largest numbers of barriers, the Maloma Arts Center and Gabriel Park, I was just curious, what would be some examples of some of the barriers there that you'd be addressing?
I believe a lot of the doorways are not compliant with the handles on the doorways, for one. I know we had an issue with the very front door being not fully accessible. So those things are going to be prioritized. Those are the, again, those are the type one barriers that we're going to be trying to get to first. But those are the big ones, I think, at Multnomah Arts Center. We also have an annex area of Multnomah Arts Center that doesn't have accessible ramp to it yet. So the programming that goes on there is programming that isn't, there isn't a need for accessibility, or we don't have any requests to have accessibility there yet. But we are working on that as well.
Thank you.
Those are the big ones.
Good questions. Thank you all. Thanks very much. Do we have some folks signed up, Carla, to speak?
No one else signed up.
Anyone else that's here that would like to speak?
How can you avoid?
Cody's not
Cody, for
speak?
God's sake, you came all the way here. Get up here. You want to bless the work? Say something about the slide that had something close to your heart on it?
All right. Didn't take much to tempt him. Good to have you here.
Is this official? I say my full name?
Just your name.
It's all your name.
Cody Goldberg, Executive Director of Harper's Playground. Thank you for the invitation to come up. I was not planning to speak, but as prodded to do so, I would be remiss if I didn't stress just how much I think there's an importance to go beyond the minimum law requirements. And there was, in the report, just a bit too much, in my opinion, talk of meeting that compliance and not enough about going well beyond. That is our biggest passion at Harper's Playground. And I think after 25 years of not even making compliance, that a plan with a more robust movement beyond minimum is just what I would really encourage the team working on this to go towards. Because some of us, we have children that are unable to reach these places. As you know, Harper is my daughter, and we don't have that much time. We visit these parks, and we're literally left on the sidelines. And my passion for parks has grown to an immeasurable amount. I believe in the power of parks to create community in a way that almost no place can. And so these places are paramount for building relationships that can influence the workplace, influence broader society. And so these parks are really, really important. And I just would challenge everyone to think beyond minimum.
Can I offer you an analogy?
Yeah.
We have a policy that Commissioner Saltzman put forth that requires that we meet a threshold of, I think it's a LEED Gold standard in our public buildings. But we've been known to invest in LEED Platinum. And in fact, now we're a city that has, I think, enough LEED Platinum buildings to achieve a distinction in terms of peer cities that have the highest rated. It's a little, you know, that requires that you push a little harder, and maybe the front end costs sometimes a little more, but the long term benefits are also clear. So I think we always should be challenged to go above the floor.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I do thank everyone for their work on that. I know is a lot of work goes into putting that data together, so I appreciate that very much. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you. And I would just say also, like, I think Westmoreland Park was done last year, finished.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's the playground there is definitely beyond the minimum. And I don't know who was the project manager on that or really put that together, but going there, I have a child, and going there and seeing him play there.
Talking about the nature area?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That was a proud partnership of Parks and BES with funding from a lot of partners in addition, and now the salmon are actually spawning, so it just keeps getting better.
So, I think there's a lot of positive things that have been done, and that, you know, hopefully through this report and the efforts that have been done to kind of capture these barriers, at least identify them, and move forward by removing them and learning. It's a great step. So,
thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, anyone else? Then do we have a motion to adopt the report?
I move to adopt the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you very much for this good work. It certainly is a lot of work, so I appreciate all the work, the detailing of the effort that we lay before us, and I think we're up for the challenge. Aye.
Novick.
I'm really impressed by the extraordinary amount of work that you managed to do in a pretty limited period of time. I mean, identifying these thousands of barriers in a 15-month period and then coming up this plan to address them is extraordinary. So thank you all very, very much. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you to all of the team and the community volunteers who've put this together. Also, the consultants did a great job, and especially to our staff in parks. As Brett mentioned, we now have a resource database to track the ADA needs when planning and designing projects and scheduling things. And we also, thanks to Kia Selly, our wonderful assets manager, we have the micro main work order system, so we know exactly when the barriers have been taken down, and we won't need to do this kind of extensive re-surveying. We'll be able to document our compliance over the years. So, and we are intending to make a lot of improvements and progress over the years, hopefully sooner rather than later. So as I said, I will be bringing forward a budget request in the main budget process 16-17, including prioritization from this report, and especially looking at things that can't be done through the bond measure projects. $5 million sounds like a lot, but when you're looking at this, we didn't even put a guess in the presentation as to how many millions of dollars all of these improvements will take to fix. It's certainly not zero. So there will be something, of course, it would be eligible for the 50% set aside for parks maintenance projects, that would, the policy that the council has of setting aside some of the ending fund balance and one-time money, some of these projects might be eligible for that. So we'll be looking at all available resources, including partnerships with the community, that if outside funders would be able to partner with us, as indeed Harper's Playground has so spectacularly, that we will be open to having community partners help us get this done. We're all in this together, and that's, to me, what this transition plan and the entire Americans with Disabilities Act work is all about. We really are all in this together, and whether you are experiencing a disability today, you may be in a position where you or a loved one is experiencing one tomorrow. And so let's fix the system for all of us. Aye.
Fish.
This is really good work, Brett. Thank you, and to the whole team for the presentation. And I think this discussion has been helpful. This is you've opened my eyes to some things I think that we'll, I have a hunch we'll be discussing during budget time. Before I got elected to office, my law practice was largely focused on removing barriers that people experience, and the civil rights laws were the tool we used. And now that I'm in government, I've learned that, you know, we have a lot of work to do to make sure that our services are barrier-free. And I'll just offer you one example that isn't directly related, but it's in the same family. As I've gotten older, my eyesight has gotten worse, and to the point where I have like $1,000 worth of corrections in my glasses, and without them, I'm legally blind. And as I have difficulty seeing things or reading things, there's a point in which, you know, my staff can blow things up to like a 0.20 or whatever for my comments, but it gets to the point we can only put a few words on a piece of paper, and so that doesn't work. So I'm working now on just memorizing the points I want to make, because it's very hard for me to read the paper. But I remember when the Water Bureau did a exercise, we were looking at some brochures, and we cleaned it up, and we thought we had hit a home run, and we gave it to Elders in Action. And we got like two or three pages of single-spaced comments back. And I would say they were some of the most alarming and insulting comments I've ever read on a project where I thought we were giving them a finished product. And among other things, they said, who can read this? The fonts are all wrong. The way the information is laid out is not legible. There's 12 phone numbers, not one. So you're going to confuse someone. An older person reading this is going to be confused about where to call. And on, why are there scary pictures? Why are you putting the disclaimers and the scary stuff up front? You're trying to scare someone from maybe not using, exercising a right? And on and on and on. And frankly, it was very sobering, because what they were saying was, walk in someone else's shoes and understand how this is received. Don't assume that because you receive the information a certain way that that's accessible. So what we used to have is little brochures like this. Now they're like this. And, you know, the first pushback in one of my bureaus was, well, that'll cost a little extra. And we said, that's okay. Spend a little extra money. Someone can actually use the information now. So the stuff we're putting in senior centers ought to be accessible to people we're trying to serve. So I think we're all learning about this as we hold these jobs, and frankly, as we age, there are things we learn. So this is very important work. I look forward to hearing from the legal department a little more about our obligations, and I think Commissioner Fritz is right. I think this is a citywide concern, and there may be a minimum we're required to meet, but we may want to go beyond that, and we may actually have to put some additional resources to funding these plans. I think that's something we should take up during the budget time. So thank you for your outstanding work. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, Office of Equity. Please to vote aye.
Hales.
Good work. Good collaboration among the bureaus and with community leaders who are going to keep pushing us to do more. A couple of reflections. One, when you look at this, when you listen to this presentation, look at this report, you get a sense of the scope of the park system, not just the scope of the problem, which you've obviously specifically enumerated here. But I think sometimes Portlanders don't realize the scope of this system. We do because we deal with it. And we know it's not complete even yet, even with more than 200 parks and many, many buildings and facilities within those parks to address. But, again, from my experience of working in a lot of other cities, that's such a distinction to Portland. Not just that we have a few great parks. Most cities have got a handful of great parks, but we've got dozens, dozens, dozens of great parks. And so the scope of the enterprise gets clear when you look at the list of capital needs, as I know Commissioner Fritz does, probably in the middle of the night, and when we get these kinds of reports. The other thing that shines through is just the sense, and whenever you deal with the Parks Bureau, this shines through, is a sense of serving the parks customer, namely all of us. And, you know, that's such a great, strong current in the culture of the Bureau. We see this all the time in everything you do, and just that sense of, boy, we want to serve more people. We want to break down those barriers. We want to get kids and adults and people of all abilities and all languages and all cultures involved. And there's just that relentless energy for inclusion that's really so much part of the Bureau's culture. And that's really important and something that we value and I think deserves to be called out, praised, because it deserves praise. So, well done. Thank you very much. Aye. And we are recessed till tomorrow at 2 p.m.